Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's August the 10th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets today with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services. He's out of Bloomington, Illinois. And we'll discuss the cash grain market as we do every Thursday with Bill Mayer. He's at the Grain Elevator in Lexington, Illinois. In agricultural news, more news on mad cow disease, this time from Canada. U.S. beef is flying off the shelf in Japan. And the AFBF, the American Farm Bureau Federation, says it will not take up elimination of the estate tax again until after the election season has been completed. Well, Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau about the election season. And just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. It all happens right here on AM 580's Closing Market Report. Before we get started, a couple of other notes. Next Tuesday, we plan to come to you live from the Illinois State Fair. Come visit us in Campustown, otherwise known as the Twilight Ballroom, situated between the Expo Building and the Coliseum. And make sure you put this one on your must-do schedule. Thursday, August 17th is the 50th Agronomy Day, right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. The morning kicks off at 7 a.m. I'll be dispatching wagons into the research plots. It's absolutely free. It will take most of the morning to see all of those plots. There's a noon hour lunch as well. You can buy that for a nominal fee. And a keynote address from Eldon Gould. He's a Northern Illinois farmer and serves as the administrator of the USDA RMA, Risk Management Agency. Think crop insurance. Come see us on the South Farms here in Urbana at 7 a.m. next Thursday morning, August the 17th. It's just a week away.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
In Chicago, on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. September wheat contract at 386.5, a penny and a half lower for the day. December futures at 407.5 were down 1.75. Kansas City wheat finished the September's at 469.25. That's $4.69 and a quarter, down 2.25 for the day. Corn futures in Chicago, September contract 238.75. They were off a penny. December down 1 at 255.75. And the March corn at $2.70 a bushel, down 0.5 for the day. December futures 1.75 lower at 302.5. August soybeans at 557 were down a nickel. September contract down 5.25 at 561.25, and November's at $5.74 and a quarter. We're off 5.75 today. November soybeans at 6.32. We're down 5.25. Bean meal futures August contract in Chicago off 70 cents at 157.90. Bean oil at 26.10, down 25. From the Merck feeder cattle August contract 117.40. They were down $1.32.5. And the August live cattle at 88.47.5. We're off 217.5. October live cattle at 92.37.5. We're down $1.92.5. Lean hogs finished, or rather up $1.92.5. Lean hogs finished at 71.52.5. They were off 77.5. Everything, by the way, at the Merck was up today, not down. So if I read that the opposite way, I hope that you'll forgive me. Crude oil futures September contract 74.10. We're down 2.25. The dollar at 85.15, up 45. And the Dow now at 11,104 is up about 28 points for the day. August gold at $634, down $16.50.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange and the outside markets is Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
I saw all that red on the grains and just transferred it over to the Mercantile Exchange when they actually had a pretty good update there at the Mercantile Exchange today.
Yeah, they sure did, especially on the hogs. Technically, after yesterday when the hogs kind of had a down day, it kind of looked like you kind of had one of those little triple tops in the October chart formation. I see today that, like I said, you know, anybody that's kind of listened to technicians, triple tops and triple bottoms are just meant to be ripped up, and I think that's got to be the case. What you saw here in hogs busting right on up through that in some pretty strong strong ideas. A lot of it is being driven, of course, by cattle. Cattle do have, I think, the seasonal uplift behind them, and we're in pretty good shape.
And then if you take a look at what's been happening at the Board of Trade prior to tomorrow morning, to tomorrow morning's production estimates. It's been a down week at the Chicago Board of Trade.
Yeah, it's been and basically the reason I think we have, the crop, I know there's probably people out there going to argue with me and may even get some phone calls at that, but for the most part, the crop has been made. Now, we're trying to argue now whether or not the national average yield of corn is maybe 145 or 155, or it might even be a little smaller, narrower in that, maybe 148, 152. So we're now in the process of fine-tuning the overall crop size. That's going to take, over the next couple months. That's what we're going to emphasize on. But any fears that we're going to have a major shortfall in crop production is behind us at this point. And that same way with soybeans. We're now to the point where we're arguing whether or not the yield's probably 39 or 41 type thing, and that depends upon probably how the next 2 to 3 weeks plays out throughout the growing region. So once you get into August and once the trade feels that the crop has been made, then it just basically waits around for the old crop inventory to kind of get cleaned up, moved into the pipeline. Then it kind of waits around until it begins to hear yield reports and whether or not the yields are better than expected or less than expected. So then that kind of sets the tone then as you go on into the harvest period.
Crystal ball just a bit for me. If tomorrow's crop production report shows that 48 to 52 or 49 to 52 in terms of yield, is the June low back at 247, 247 and three quarters, 248 low enough for the December corn contract?
Probably not. I think the way the trade's going to read the numbers tomorrow, and I think maybe this is kind of maybe why we got some weakness here going into the closer today, is that as a rule, and it's hard to believe this, but more often than not, USDA underestimates the crop on the August 1st report. So what I think the trade's going to read into it, if the number is such and such, then the number is 2 to 3 bushels better than that. Because we've had improving weather since August 1st, and then the tendency of the crops to get bigger as we go down the road. So I think even if USDA did give us somewhat of a supportive number, let's say 148 or maybe even 147, I think the trade would probably say, just wait next month, it'll be 2 bushels higher. So I think we run the risk of that, and that same way with the soybeans. Now, in order to really give us a bearish report, supply-wise, USDA is going to have to put up some pretty probably record August 1 yield estimates, and I'm not too sure they're quite ready to do that. So, I mean, it's going to be an interesting report tomorrow. The greatest thing, of course, is how the market reacts to it. Now, somewhere in here, and it could start tomorrow, I don't know, the market is going to shift its focus from this crop year and this crop and supply and demand to what it may or may not take a year from now as the market tries to move acres into one commodity or the other through the price mechanism. So somewhere in here, the market's going to catch, and we're going to start worrying about buying acres in corn, buying wheat acres, reducing soybean acres, and all this rigmarole. But that may wait two, 3 months. I don't know.
If you're convinced that the market may have a bit lower to go in the corn, how much LDP do you think might be in play this fall?
I don't know. My guess is if we go into LDP status, that it's going to be more in the 10 to 15 cent range or 10 to 20 cent range. And I think that may only come fairly briefly and fairly early. I think if we go into that, it has to happen, I think, As we finish up old crop selling or move an old crop inventory into the pipeline between now and, let's say, first week or so of September, I think once the combines start rolling, I think farmers as a group will be fairly tight holders of old inventory. So I think the selling pressure will begin to actually decline once harvest begins, as foolish as that sounds. So I think the greatest amount of pressure the market faces, I think, comes right in here over the next 2 to 3 weeks. And then other than that, then it may happen again at the tail end of harvest, which would be more, you know, as you get into November, December, depending upon, you know, the ultimate size of this crop.
Anything else to add before we let you go?
I think that's about it.
Thank you much. We appreciate it. And that is Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services. He is in Bloomington, Illinois. By the way, I checked the LDP numbers, and I know you've done that as well. But no LDP, of course, in the state of Illinois. I checked Minnesota just to see where LDP might be in play, and certainly in Minnesota it is in play. A dime, I think, on a lot of places for corn, and for soybeans, something between 3 and 14 cents, depending on where you are in that state. And unlike the state of Illinois and Indiana, they vary a great deal across that area. As to how much LDP they're actually getting from place to place. Now, just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. AM 580's own Ed Kieser says a severe thunderstorm watch is in effect for much of southern Illinois and southern Indiana until about 8 o'clock Central Time tonight, 9 p.m. if you're in the eastern time zone. Tonight, Ed says across the two-state region, mostly cloudy, some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. Those will be most numerous, in central and southern sections. Lows will range from 62 in northeastern Indiana to 74 in southern Illinois. Tomorrow, Ed says, in the north, partly to mostly sunny. In central sections, partly sunny, a few lingering showers, some thunderstorms. In the south, mostly cloudy, some scattered showers and thunderstorms. Highs tomorrow from 78 in the north to 88 in southern Illinois. Dave Dickey will be here in just a moment to take a complete look at today's agricultural news. I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on AM 580.
In agricultural news, Canadian officials say the Manitoba cow that died of BSE tested positive for the same rare strain of mad cow disease that was found in two U.S. cows in Texas and Alabama. This is the first atypical case in Canada. The nation's other six cases of BSE involve a strain of the disease associated with the outbreak that began in England in 1986. Canadian officials have been unable to link the Manitoba cow to any feed source that might have caused the disease, nor could it locate the cow's birth farm. Yesterday's resumption of U.S. beef sales in Japan is a sellout. In less than 24 hours, Japanese consumers snatched up 5 metric tons of U.S. beef from 3 Tokyo stores, the first U.S. beef to arrive in Japan since January when an illegal shipment closed the border. Japanese shoppers lined up for tastes of U.S. beef, and many purchased multiple packs. Officials at the American Farm Bureau Federation say they will not lobby lawmakers during the August congressional break to revisit the estate tax issue this fall. Pat Wolf is tax specialist for the AFBF. Wolf says heading into the fall elections, the tax fight is all uphill.
Unfortunately, that effort failed. We still came up short. So unless there's some external force that changes people's minds, I'm not sure what the fall will bring for death tax.
The U.S. Senate failed to break a filibuster on the issue by 3 votes last month. Still, Wolf says there could be a congressional push to pass at least part of the defeated package. Wolf says that could bode well for those who support estate tax reform.
The strategy of last week's vote was to combine death taxes with some things that are considered must-pass. Those are extensions of very popular tax incentives. There's no question that there will be a tremendous push to pass those tax extensions.
Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist can recall the package for consideration after changing his vote from yes to no to end debate on the issue last month. Early estimates from AgRural suggest Brazilian farmers will be planting fewer soybeans this year. AgRural projects Brazil's planted area will be down at least 6% to 20 million hectares. Earlier, farm consulting firm AgroConsult put plantings below 20 million hectares, the smallest soy planted area since the 2003-2004 growing season, when 19.7 million hectares were planted. Brazilian farmers are facing their worst financial crisis since the government changed its currency in 1995. Soybean rust sightings this summer have been few and far between. To date, rust on soybeans has been found in 9 counties in 5 states: Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Louisiana, and Mississippi. Thomas Keever is with the North American Plant Disease Forecast Center in Raleigh, North Carolina. Keever says weather conditions have spared the Midwest from soybean rust spores.
Like last year, in the middle and upper levels of the atmosphere, we have had a strong ridge of high pressure that's been very persistent for a large portion of the summer. And when you have that, that's, as everyone knows in those areas, hot and very dry conditions. And it looks like that's going to continue for the most part, at least through the next week.
The latest on soybean rust can be found on the web at www.sbrusa.net. USDA and the Department of the Interior announced yesterday that they are expanding wild bird monitoring for highly pathogenic H5N1 avian influenza beyond Alaska through cooperative efforts and projects made with the lower states, Hawaii, and other Pacific islands. USDA has completed cooperative agreements with 48 states and is finalizing agreements with the last 2 holdouts. These agreements provide nearly $4 million for state agencies to sample specific species of migratory birds at appropriate sites under plans coordinated through the 4 national flyway councils. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your director of agricultural programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Tomorrow morning, by about 7:40, you'll find the latest crop production numbers released from USDA at 7:30 a.m. And you can sign up for our weekend newsletter. We'll send out a flash version of that tomorrow morning if you're signed up, and deliver those numbers directly to your email account. It's all at willag.org. By the way, while you're there, scroll down and you'll find all the Ag Outlook panels that we've scheduled, well, many of them at least, for this fall, starting next week on August the 16th in Tuscola, the 17th in Decatur, the 19th in West Lafayette, and there are more and more and more after that. You'll be able to find an Ag Outlook panel near you. Well, up next, in today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkus says the rural vote will be more important than ever this November.
During the 2004 presidential election, slightly more than 50% of registered voters went to the polls to choose our nation's leader for the next 4 years. That contrasts with years without a presidential election on the ballot, when poll turnout typically drops to about 1/3 of eligible voters. The same scenario is likely to play out in November, which presents an incredible opportunity for rural voters, farmers and non-farmers alike, to make their voices heard. This year, Americans will elect 36 state governors, 33 seats in the U.S. Senate, the entire House of Representatives. This year, there is considerable speculation regarding the partisan balance of Congress. In addition, hundreds of officials at the state, county, parish, and township levels will be elected. Although residents of rural America make up 20 to 23% of our nation's population, research shows they tend to turn out at the polls in far greater numbers than their urban and suburban counterparts. If the overall voter apathy trend continues among urban and suburban residents, while residents in the rural areas come out to the polls in droves, each vote cast becomes even more significant. Among rural residents, farmers are well known to have a high level of political activity. As independent business families, they have a lot at stake. While they produce affordable food, fiber, and fuel, they also take care of our nation's land, forests, and streams. Together, farmers and non-voters living in the same communities can help make rural America a force to be reckoned with by exercising their right to vote. Even though lots of folks are talking about the political balance of Congress without a presidential election on the ballot this fall, the din from the media about the candidates will likely be somewhat muted by comparison. However, many special interest groups and organizations are more happy to tell you how to vote. Compounding the situation is the fact that political candidates running for office can be like chameleons. They often change to blend in with their environment as they seek your vote as the countdown to election day nears. Prime examples of this can be seen throughout rural America, particularly during fair season. We will see candidates scrambling to conjure up heartland imagery by eating barbecue, shucking sweet corn, milking cows, and yes, kissing babies. Even so, it's up to each one of us as voters to dig deeper than the family-friendly images presented by the candidates. We must determine which candidate will do the best job representing rural residents, agriculture, and all of America. We need to do that, then get out and vote our conscience. Each vote can and does make a difference. This is Amy Rochkus with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkus' comments are her own. They reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of the station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, call us at 217-333-0850.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
On this Thursday afternoon, as he always does, Bill Maron joins us from the elevator there in Lexington, Illinois, to take a look at the cash grain market just ahead of tomorrow's crop production report. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
How are farmers feeling after some good rainfalls and looking at a good green crop out there?
Well, I think everybody's pretty positive about this crop. Some guys are out, you know, walking, doing some checks and seeing what things look like. Of course, you never know on the soybeans, but the corn, I think they're starting to come in with a pretty good feel that they've got a good crop out there.
It is pretty amazing. You never know on soybeans. Now, nobody's ever been really able to go out and just say what they think is in their field. The crop, I think, comes on so late.
Even 2 days before they combine, and it seems like it's hard to tell.
Yeah. Are they a little concerned about the marketplace yet?
Well, I think so. I think that, you know, especially those guys that may have a little bit of old crop left, and I guess, you know, at this point in time, you about got to wait another day and see what the report says tomorrow. I don't know how bearish it can be at this point, but we'll find out, I guess, in the morning. One thing I told Dave earlier there, I have learned over the years, and that is that you can't figure it out. I mean, you're not going to come up with what they're going to say for sure.
No, this in particular for the August report, this one always seems to throw some surprises at most of the marketplace.
Yeah, I think the trade is really talking about this fact that they underestimate the August report. I mean, it's got an average of about 6 bushel an acre over the last 5 years. I guess the question is, if they come up with 148, 149, let's just say, and now all of a sudden we want to assume that they're going to come up with 6 bushel an acre better than that, you know, in the following reports, I'm not sure when I'm sitting there looking at a billion bushel carryout that I want to go in and short that market on the idea that I'm sure USDA is going to come up with more bushels. So, who, you know, the bears kind of have the upper hand. Will they have it if you drop the carryout down below a billion bushel? That's really the question, I think.
Yeah, and the other question is your bids for the day, please.
209 on the corn, 216 new crop, 514 on beans, and 523 new crop.
Bill, thanks much.
Thank you.
Bill Mayer of Rochag Marketing joins us on Thursday afternoons to take a look at the cash grain market. Time now for your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Governor Rod Blagojevich says no locations in Illinois are known to be targets of the recently uncovered plot to blow up several transatlantic flights. But airport security is tighter across Illinois and Indiana also in the wake of the terrorist threat. Chicago Aviation Commissioner Nuria Fernandez says security officials at Midway and O'Hare airports will continue to enforce new restrictions banning liquids and gels from carry-on bags. Similar restrictions are in place at the Indianapolis International Airport. The security checks have not caused any severe delays at smaller regional airports. Still, Willard Airport manager Steve Wansack says it's a good idea to arrive at the airport a little earlier than usual. Illinois Senator Dick Durbin says plots like the one alleged by British authorities today will be a continuing challenge to U.S. security. Durbin praised the Homeland Security Administration for its reaction to the alleged threat. Durbin made his comments in Tuscola this morning and also stopped in Mattoon. Both stops were for meetings with other political and business leaders, lobbying to bring the groundbreaking Future Gen coal plant to Illinois. Illinois Commerce and Economic Opportunity Director Jack Levin says he's confident the state's bid to build the low-pollution facility in Tuscola or Mattoon outweighs bids from two Texas towns, regardless of that state's political influence. Speaking at a meeting in Tuscola this morning, Levin said Illinois has superior coal reserves as well as a better water supply and infrastructure advantages. A judge in Tippecanoe County, Indiana, has declared a mistrial in the case of a psychiatric nurse charged with killing her estranged husband. Geraldine Livingston began wailing as a prosecution witness testified. It was her second outburst in 2 days. A McLean County grand jury has returned a 35-count indictment against a Bloomington, Illinois police officer accused of 4 rapes dating back to 2002. The indictment involves the same 4 victims that Sergeant Jeff Pilo was accused of sexually assaulting in charges filed last month. But the indictment adds nearly 30 additional charges alleging multiple attacks on 3 of the victims. Pilo remains jailed in lieu of more than $2 million bond. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at lincolnlandagrienergy.com.
Well, it seems that Pete Leavitt on this Thursday afternoon is not available. We do have Ed Kieser's forecast for the two-state region. He says skies should be mostly cloudy tonight across the two-state area. Some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms, most numerous in central and southern sections. Lows will range from 62 in northeastern Indiana to 74 in southern Illinois. And tomorrow in the north, and it'll be partly to mostly sunny in central sections, partly sunny with a few scattered showers and thunderstorms. In the south, mostly cloudy. Some scattered showers and a few thunderstorms. Highs will range from 78 to 88 in southern Illinois. Jay Searles is here in the studio, and he'll take us through some of the warnings and forecasts that are out for the Midwest, parts of central Illinois. Things are heating up just a bit. Coming in from our weather office. Hi, Jay. Thanks for filling in this afternoon.
You betcha. Glad to be here. We do have some severe weather. It's down in southern Illinois and basically south of Interstate 70. A few warnings out down there. Don't have the exact counties out in front of me, but generally in that area is where we're watching the strongest storms. And it looks like they're going to continue and as they move into southern Indiana through the afternoon. Also watching some showers and thunderstorms out in western Illinois. So far, they're staying below severe limits, but we still have a slight risk out for most of central Illinois for some severe weather yet this afternoon. We'll see how much heating we get. If we can get the temperatures back up into the 80s and mid-80s, we could get unstable enough. We'll start to see some stronger storms again. Once again, this is all part of a stationary front that's just been plaguing us all week long. You know, it's just been stalled out here. The computer models we use one day, or actually one solution will come in and clear it all out, and then the next solution comes in and says it's going to be here for another 2 days. So it's like back and forth, the forecasters are hemming and hawing, and I've just been saying, being persistent and saying this is just going to stay with us. I don't see it breaking up until it breaks up, basically, which could be tomorrow. It could be the end of the weekend. It may not be until next week. It's sort of like take it one day at a time and look things over and see how it's sitting up. If we get something that's really strong that comes through in the jet stream and kicks it out of here, then that'll change. But plenty of moisture and lots of moisture in the air as well for these storms to work and feed on.
We appreciate you coming in, Jay, on short notice, and we'll keep an eye on what you have to say about the weather as we head through the weekend and see if we can actually get some sunshine out there. Thanks much.
You bet.
Jay Searles, part of the weather staff here at WILL AM 580, filling in this afternoon for Pete Levitt, who was unavailable for the agricultural weather forecast today. That is the Closing Market Report. Remember, join us tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the agricultural markets on the pre-opening commodity market report with Dave Dickey. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.